This is Orson Welles, speaking from London.
To keep you in suspense.
I had a be everyday grind.
Night transmissions. Hello, this is Gary Quentin, and welcome to Night Transmissions, number 33. Tonight, we're going to start off with one of my favorite things, an episode of the South African radio play, The Avengers. It is the same Avengers that ran on television in England and elsewhere in the world in the 1960s, actually in incarnations, given various variants on the name The Avengers. It ran right through the 1970s. The South African radio series ran between 1971 and 1973. And no one seems to be exactly certain of the air dates on these programs. The one I've got tonight, The Joker, is probably from 1972. But like I said, it could be as early as 71, no later than 73. As far as I know, all of the South African radio Avengers were based on TV programs. This program, The Joker, was based on a 1967 Avengers, also called The Joker, which, instead of a regression of events, was also based on an Avenger from 1963 called Don't Look Behind You. The chief difference between the 1967 and the 1963 version is probably the cast. I mean, Patrick McNee was still John Steed, but Emma Peel was nowhere on the scene. At that time, the female lead was a woman named Kathy Yale, played by Honor Blackman.
Now, from the makers of Coldwater Omo,
the ugly old kitchen clock looked down on the scullery of the house. The room had seen better days, and trays piled with crockery, the smells of good food, and the heat of the coal stoves and steam boilers. Now it was different. Electrical appliances had replaced the old-fashioned methods, but the room was still dominated by a large, scrubbed wooden table. A shadow fell across it. The shadow of a man. He held a candlestick in one hand, and by the flickering light, he gazed at the glossy cover of a magazine. He placed the candle on the table and opened the magazine.
Yes, it's here somewhere.
The man stopped at an article in the magazine and read,
Better Bridge with Applied Mathematics by Mrs. Emma Peel.
There, sure enough, was a photograph of Mrs. Peel. A very lush, full-page color reproduction. It was an attractive pose, and from the dimpled smile and twinkling eyes, it was clear that Mrs. Peel knew quite a lot more about life than how to play bridge. The man's hands lingered over the page, stroking the glossy surface of Mrs. Peel's face. Then he ripped the page from the magazine and with a pair of kitchen scissors began to cut the picture into small pieces. When the page lay in fragments on the table, the large, hairy hands reached out and began to reassemble the picture. He chuckled as he worked. Twisting the features, rearranging them, an eye appeared in the center of the forehead, an ear sat on one cheek, and a hank of hair grew from the pink lips. It became a monstrous, sinister, obscene jigsaw. The owner of the hairy hands clenched them until the gnarled knuckles turned white, His laughter grew wilder. He seized a kitchen knife and hacked at the pieces in a frenzy of madness. Someone doesn't like you, Mrs. Peel.
The Avengers. John Steed and Emma Peel, The Avengers.
Episode 1 of this story, in which John Steed is forced to sit out the first round of the game, and Emma Peel suspects that somewhere in the background lurks a joker. On a rather misty morning, Emma Peel drove carefully across London to John Steed's Mews apartment. She was dressed in a warm, dark red trouser suit with a gay scarf at the neck. She looked very like the recent photographs of herself that appeared in the glossy magazines. She was in a carefree mood and hummed quite cheerfully as she parked the car outside Steed's home. A few moments later, John Steed, who was upstairs, heard the front doorbell ring.
Coming!
Steed made his way downstairs quite quickly. Too quickly, perhaps. Halfway down the stairs, Steed tripped, lost his balance and fell heavily, dragging a few ornaments with him. He landed painfully on one ankle. It promptly gave way. Mrs. Peel, hearing the crash, tried the door. It opened.
Steed? Steed, what's happened?
Mrs. Peel, you are needed.
What on earth have you done?
Came downstairs to answer the door. Forgot it wasn't locked. I fell. Hurt my ankle.
Well, let's have a look. Ooh, nasty.
Yeah, painful, too.
Come on, let's get you up into a chair.
Bath?
Well, you look clean enough. Oh, I see what you mean. Well, I don't know about a wheelchair, but you must certainly keep off that leg for a while. There. Better?
Thanks.
Lucky you didn't break it. As it is, your tango may be irreparably damaged.
Tango? I'm not as old hat as all that. I'm getting with it.
Well, it's obvious that you got as far as the twist. This ankle's very badly sprained. What do we do about it? Get a doctor?
No, get a drink. Over there, three fingers of scotch.
Right.
What brought you here this misty morning?
Well, I was going to ask you to drive me down to Exmoor. Here, that should kill the pain a bit.
Thanks. Cheers.
Cheers. I suppose I shall have to take myself down then, huh?
Exmoor? Who the devil is in Exmoor?
Sir Cavalier Rausacana.
He sounds like an opera.
He's probably the greatest bridge player in Europe. He read my article that appeared in a magazine lately. Anyway, he wants to meet me.
Oh?
He's invited me down to his house for the weekend.
Oh.
Sir Cavalier is 75.
Oh. Just the same, be careful. You know what a rejuvenating effect you have on people. I mean, look at me. I feel better already. Hardly any pain in the leg at all. Well, almost not.
It's quite a privilege to meet Sir Cavalier. He hardly ever sees anyone.
Well, he could have a very small fan mail. Well, if you're dead set on this jaunt, I suppose you better get going. Well, don't let me delay you.
I'm sure you'll be all right.
Quite sure. Now, you run along and enjoy yourself. I only wish I was coming with you, but... Oh, well, it was not to be, thanks to those blasted stairs. Bye, Mrs. Peel.
Goodbye, Steve.
Mrs. Peel left. A short while later, she was driving through the cold English countryside, her scarf catching the breeze, a smile on her face. Could it be that she rather liked going without John Steed? Careful, Mrs. Peel, you may regret this newfound freedom. As for Steed, back in his apartment, he hobbled painfully across the room to the cigar humidor. He selected one, poured himself another brandy, lit the cigar, and was about to enjoy both when the doorbell rang again. Steed limped across the room, down the small passage, and opened the door.
George. George Fancy.
Hello, Steed.
Oh, come in, come in. Nice to see you. Go ahead, I'll have to hobble up from behind.
Oh, what happened? You run into counter-espionage, tangled with the minions of a mastermind?
Oh, something far more sinister. I fell down the stairs.
My word, you weren't...
Certainly not. But speaking of a drink, would you like one?
Well, thanks, yes, just one.
You wouldn't like to help yourself, would you? Just poured myself one.
Yes, of course. I hope it's not inconvenient calling like this.
Well, it's a pleasure. As you see, I'm confined to barracks at the moment.
Yes. Well, actually, I only called to warn you. Cheers.
Cheers. Warn me of what?
Remember Max Prendergast?
Remember? Impossible to forget him.
He's out.
Out? Of prison?
Broke jail 2 days ago.
2 days ago?
The French authorities didn't think to tell us until they realized he's heading this way. Steed? We're pretty sure he's here, in London.
Max Prendergast.
You know the kind of man he is? That mad, warped sense of humor?
Oh, yes, I know. Of all people, I know.
Steed, will you tell Mrs. Peel?
Mrs. Peel?
Well, she was more involved with Prendergast than anyone. She ought to be warned, don't you think?
Yes. Yes, I do. I'll tell her on Monday. She'll be tucked away quite safely in the country for the next couple of days. I'll tell her on Monday. No point in spoiling her weekend. Max Prendergast, eh? I don't like the idea of him on the loose. Not one little bit.
Mrs. Peel had had quite a tiring drive. Her good spirits had begun to wilt as the mist turned into fog. She lost her way a couple of times down the country lanes and was quite relieved when at last she found a sign pointing off the road which read, Rousicana Hall. She turned up the drive and minutes later parked the car. The house looked impressive, what she could see of it. She ran up the steps, carrying her weekend case, and rang the doorbell. While she waited, she glanced around, peering out into the fog. She was quite unaware that in the laurel bushes, not more than a few yards away, a man was peering back at her. Two large, hairy hands parted the branches, and then the door opened.
Good afternoon. I'm Emma Peel.
Hello.
Sir Cavalier is expecting me.
Yes, he told me. Do come in.
That's if you want to. Well, that was the idea of coming down here. And with this fog...
I love fogs. They're cozy. This way.
The interior of the house was dim and shadowy. Heavy antique furniture filled the hall and the main rooms. The strange young lady led Mrs. Peel into a slightly more cheerful-looking drawing room and closed the door.
My name's Ula. Ula Monsey Chamberlain. Isn't it a shriek? Monsey was a pirate. I was lying on the bed when you rang the bell.
Oh, sorry. I'm a bit late, I'm afraid. Got lost a couple of times.
Oh, I'm not surprised. This place is the end of the world, isn't it? I'm not surprised you got lost. I like your coat.
Oh, thank you.
I was reading an Italian book. I don't understand Italian, but I love reading it aloud. The words sound so nice. They roll off the tongue. Do you play bridge?
Yes.
I hate bridge. You're not a dentist, are you?
No, why?
Well, I have two fillings. It needs seeing to.
Oh, I'm sorry. I can't be any help to you, Miss Chamberlain. Don't you think you should tell Sir Cavalier that I'm here?
Oh, my goodness, didn't I mention it? He isn't here. He was called away this morning, a meeting in town. The IBPC, the...
International Bridge Players Convention.
Yes.
I see. When will he be back?
Sometime tonight, I think. Oh, he apologized. Would you like to see your room now? I hope you like the old homestead.
Well, it's very impressive.
There you are being kind. It's sinister and old and filled with dead things. Yes, the dead could live here very easily. An ideal place for a murder, I always think. I'm sure you'll agree before you've been here for long. This way. Did I say I'm having trouble with my teeth?
Yes.
Awfully good teeth, aren't they? White and straight.
Extremely. You said uncle just now, so you are related.
Oh, no, not really. I'm his ward. Mummy and he were awfully good friends. Mummy's dead now and he looks after me. Well, I look after him more. He's such an old dear. I mean, he's old, but not a bit stodgy. It's this way to your room. Yes, you see, Uncle really understands me.
Oh, bully for Sir Cavalier. A psychiatrist as well as a bridge player.
Do you think I'm kinky?
Oh, I beg your pardon.
No, it doesn't matter. You'll get used to me. This way.
Ola led the way up the wide oak stairs, along a landing flanked with suits of armor and tall furniture. And there at the end of the landing was, incongruously, a large swivel door. On the door was painted a life-size playing card. It was a joker.
What an extraordinary door.
Oh, yes. Doesn't open. Not like an ordinary door. It revolves. Look.
The door spun round. When it stopped, Emma found herself looking at the illustration on the other side of the door. It was the Ace of Spades, the death card.
Extraordinary. Where's my room?
Oh, to here.
I must say the house is magnificent. About 1620, isn't it?
Oh, I don't know. I don't really know much about these things at all. Except that I think this house is dreamy, especially at night. Are you afraid of the dark?
Not especially.
I love the dark. Owl time. Full of creeps and crawls and chill spines. Ooh, one can imagine all sorts of tingles. All sorts of things. This is your room.
Mrs. Peel entered a most gracious room, beautifully furnished with oaken chests, high-backed easy chairs, and dominated by a large draped four-poster bed. Mrs. Peel was delighted with it.
But this is charming, utterly charming.
Yes, it is nice, isn't it? Especially the bed. One can imagine some pale maiden with golden tresses just lying on it, wasting away for her night to come.
A night with a capital K, I presume.
Oh, one never knows one's luck. Of course, it's a bit difficult with a name like I've got. Ula Monzi Chamberlain. Monzi hyphen Chamberlain.
So you said.
You know what the hyphen is, don't you?
The bar sinister?
Oh, well, at least that's what it was supposed to mean in the olden days. Monzi hyphen Chamberlain. Did I tell you about Monzi?
Yes, you said he was a pirate.
Yes, that's right. We've had them all in our family. Pirates, judges, soldiers, nuns.
And you?
I'm an actress.
Oh. What have you done recently?
Well, I've only just become an actress. I'd rather be a nun, really. Oh, just imagine making Benedictus and lovely liqueurs.
I think you've got that a little muddled. And the monks make it, not the nuns.
Oh.
But perhaps you could be smuggled into the monastery.
Oh, what fun, all those dirty habits. We've never had a smuggler in the family. Monzi was a pirate, but it's not really the same thing, is it?
While Mrs. Peel was unpacking her bag, Ula moved over to the casement window and drew aside the lace curtain. She stared down into the fog. There, in the shrubbery, stood a large man, gazing up at the lighted window.
We've never had a smuggler, or a surgeon, or a dentist. Have I shown you my key?
Frequently.
We've never had a politician, either.
Well, that could be a blessing in disguise.
Or a murderer. Yet.
Ula? Where are the rest of the staff?
Staff?
Well, surely you don't run this place on your own.
Only at the moment, for a little while. Nobody stays for long, you see. It's the end of the world here, so nobody stays for long, except Mrs. Darbright, the housekeeper. She's away at the moment in Scotland visiting her sister. We're between housemaids. The old one left yesterday. The new one arrives Monday.
I see. And you don't mind being here on your own?
I'm not on my own now. There's you, isn't there? Yes, there's you. Well, I better start preparing dinner. It's funny you're not being afraid of the dark.
Mrs. Peel stared at the closed door, shrugged her elegant shoulders, and moved to the window to straighten the lace curtains. She looked out into the fog and down into the grounds. All was still, silent. The fog swirled between the branches of the trees, seeping into the bushes. There was no sign of the man. Down in the kitchen, Ula moved to the refrigerator and took out a large, fat fish. She took it into the scullery and laid it on the huge, scrubbed wooden table. She glanced up at the clock. It ticked its message back at her. She smiled and moved to a rack of shining knives, selected one, tested its edge, and with a gesture that was more one of cruelty than any culinary act, plunged the blade into the fish's belly and prepared supper. Upstairs, Mrs. Peel finished dressing. She'd changed into a trouser evening suit and put the finishing touches to her hair. She glanced round the room before leaving it and noticed for the first time a large oak chest in almost the shape of a coffin. Intrigued, she walked over to it and lifted the lid. She stared at the contents. It was filled with old gramophone records, all old 78s. Just at that moment, quite close at hand, the dinner gong rang out. Ula stood in the open doorway.
Dinner served. Dinner's always served at 8 in this house. It's the only thing Uncle Cavalier's really strict about. Ready?
I'm quite ready. But shouldn't we wait for him?
Oh, no, he's going to be late. He insisted that you go ahead without him.
Oh.
Anyway, it's ready. Come along.
Ula led the way along the passage and through the revolving door. The Joker leered down at her. She looked back, and the Ace of Spades now guarded the way to the bedroom. As they walked downstairs to the dining room, Mrs. Peel said...
How do you know your guardian's going to be late?
Hmm? What's that? Oh, do be careful of that bit of stair carpet. We don't want you falling down and breaking an ankle, do we?
No.
It can happen, you know, even to the most careful person.
Yes, I know.
Are you a careful person?
Reasonably. You haven't answered my question.
Did you ask one?
How did you know Sir Cavalier is going to be late?
Oh, he phoned me.
As they moved from the stairs across the hall, Mrs. Peel noticed the telephone standing on a table. She was darn sure if it had rung while she was dressing, she would have heard it. She entered the dining room, quite the loveliest room in the house. The table was long, with magnificent candelabra at both ends. Placemats lined either side of the table. They all depicted playing cards. At either end of the table, two places were set. The table mats were both jokers. Ula indicated one.
If you'll sit here.
Thank you. Strange, playing cards on the table mats.
Oh, they're very friendly. The eyes seem to stare at one alive. When I eat here alone, I play great scenes to them. Scenes full of desperate tragedy. I want to make the eyes weep. It's fish. Oh, the wine's red. Oh, dear, it's all I could find. The wine in the cellar is locked up, you see.
Well, doesn't your uncle trust you?
No, it's not that. He always locks it up when he goes away for any length of... I just adore red wine, don't you? But it is fish.
Oh, I don't mind. My palate's quite adaptable.
Oh, that's all right, then. There's the bell if you want anything. Just ring and I'll come to you.
Aren't you joining me?
Oh, I'm on dart. Slimming. It's important for an actress to keep her figure. That place at the other end is for Uncle Cavalier when he gets back. Here's the fish. Oh, excuse me.
Mrs. Peel sipped her wine and tasted the fish. Both were excellent. The telephone stopped. Mrs. Peel strained her ears to catch Ula's side of the conversation. She heard nothing. A few minutes later, Ula appeared in the dining room. She was dressed in warm, outdoor clothes.
A friend of mine in the village has been taken ill. She wants me to go over straight away.
Oh, then you must go, of course.
Oh, dear, I don't want to leave you here alone. I mean, I feel a bit bad about it.
I'll be perfectly all right.
It's 5 miles, the village. Even if I cut across the field, I mean, it's a long way.
Well, take my car. Here, the keys are in my handbag. There, I'll explain to your uncle what's happened.
You won't like it here alone, at night.
I'm not the nervous type. I'll probably curl up with a book.
Oh, right you are.
Ula took the keys Mrs. Peel offered and, turning up the collar of her large tweed coat, made for the door.
I'll see you later, then. Oh, there was something else. You're all alone in this big house. Make sure you lock the door.
A short while later, the front door slammed. Mrs. Peel continued with her meal. Upstairs, the revolving door, seemingly unaided, slowly swung round. The Joker was replaced by the death card. Watch it, Mrs. Peel.
The event. Avengers.
Mrs. Peel tasted the fish approvingly and sipped the wine. Being alone in the huge rambling mansion didn't worry her a bit, but she was puzzled.
Kinky. The whole setup is definitely kinky. Particularly Ula. I must admit she cooks delicious fish.
Perhaps Mrs. Peel was at that moment just a little too self-contained. Had she been more apprehensive, more anxious about her circumstances, she might have noticed that the revolving door at the top of the stairs had been turned round. Mrs. Peel didn't know whether to be annoyed or amused at the circumstances in which she found herself. They were unusual, to say the least of it. When a young, attractive woman is invited down to a country house for the weekend, she doesn't expect to dine alone on the very first evening. Mrs. Peel, unaware of any hidden danger, finished her dinner, poured herself a liqueur brandy in a balloon glass, selected a miniature cigar from a box on the drinks table, and moved off to inspect the rooms on the ground floor.
I'm the only person here. I could be holding a house party for 50 in this place. One thing is certain, Sir Cavalier has a lot of money. I wonder how he made it all.
Mrs. Peel was in the study when the tinkle of a bell sounded from another part of the house. It wasn't a doorbell. It seemed to come from the direction of the servants' quarters. Mrs. Peel made her way towards it, pushing open the green baize door that led to the kitchen. The room was silent when she entered. Above the door to the scullery was a large wooden box that contained bells numbering individual rooms. The spring of the bell marking bedroom number 3 continued to tremble gently. Had someone upstairs been trying to call a servant? Mrs. Peel frowned and, shaking her head, dismissed the idea. She walked through into the scullery. The loud ticking of the clock made her look across the room. Her attention was caught by something on the scrubbed wooden table. It was a knife, stuck upright into the surface. There was blood smeared all over the blade.
I said Ula was kinky. This proves it. She guts the fish, prepares it and cooks it. Cleans away all the mess, but leaves this. I must have been crazy to lend her my car.
You're right there, Mrs. Peel. At that moment, Ula, at the wheel of the car, was giggling rather hysterically. Ula was making no real attempt to leave the driveway. She could hardly see in the thick fog. Eventually, she parked the car, got out, and started to walk back in the direction of the house, still giggling. Kinky. Meanwhile, back in London, poor old Steed was limping about his flat, feeling rather sorry for himself. He made coffee in his kitchen and was carrying it through when the sugar basin containing the lump sugar fell from the tray.
Oh, what the devil with it?
The sugar basin fell near the stairs. The lumps of sugar scattered over the bottom steps. As Steed bent down to retrieve them, a glint of metal caught his eye.
What the devil is this? Small metal box? How did that get there, fixed into the side of the stairs?
Steed pulled the device free from its place of concealment and examined it. He touched the spring at the side, and a length of fine tripwire shot out.
Booby trap. Stretched across the stairs, it's guaranteed to trip up anyone coming down. The moment the wire's touched, it withdraws immediately. So that's how I nearly broke an ankle.
Steed hobbled across to the telephone and made a call. George Fancy answered quite promptly.
George Fancy speaking.
George, Steed here.
Ah, Steed. How's the ankle?
Much the same, thanks. George, it's not April the 1st, is it?
What's that?
It's not All Fool's Day.
Well, of course it isn't.
Yes, I thought not.
Steed, are you delirious or something?
My fall down the stairs. It wasn't an accident. Someone fixed a tripwire on the steps. Somebody playing a joke on me.
Now, look here, Steed. You don't mean it, surely.
I most certainly do. Stranger should call that little warning about Max Prendergast being in London, isn't it?
Steed, you don't think... What about Mrs. Peel?
Yeah, that's the reason for this call. Look, I want the address and all the information you can muster on Sir Cavalier Rousicana.
Who?
Sir Cavalier Rossicana. He's a bridge champion, lives on Exmoor somewhere. Now get everything you can on him immediately and phone me back, will you?
Yes, 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 of course.
Got a short break here, but we'll be right back to John and Emma very soon.
Immediately, and phone me back, will you?
Yes, 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 of course. But Mrs. Peel...
is visiting him. Now, I must get down to her before some joker gets hold of her, too. You understand?
Mrs. Peel decided to retire to her room and read. She found a suitably relaxing book in the library and made her way up the stairs. She passed through the revolving door, swinging the ace of spades after her. In her room, she noticed that the curtains on the four-poster bed had been closed. She switched on her portable radio.
A further drop in subsidies to counteract the recent potato glut. That concludes the news headlines, and now here is a summary of the weather.
Oh, dear.
Widespread fog is reported tonight in the outlying districts of West and Southwest England. This is particularly dense in and around Exmoor, where the visibility is bound to miss.
Oh, Miss Penny's bed. Oh.
Mrs. Peel moved over and opened the lid of the coffin-shaped chest.
Now, what are all these old 78s? What's this one? Mademoiselle. And this? The same. They're all the same. How very, very odd.
Mrs. Peel moved to the bed and drew aside the heavy curtains.
Oh. A large teddy bear. Ula upped her tricks again. Oh, it's really a hot water bottle. Well, that could come in handy.
Mrs. Peel broke off in the middle of her thoughts when she heard a strange creaking noise from somewhere in the house. She moved to the bedroom door and opened it. The noise was louder. It sounded like a rocking chair moving, coming from a room at the far end of the corridor. Mrs. Peel walked stealthily towards the far door and threw it open quite suddenly, feeling for the light switch.
Nothing. But the rocking chair, it's still moving.
The furniture appeared to be covered in dust sheets. Mrs. Peel was about to uncover them when the front doorbell rang. Without switching off the light, she ran from the room along the corridor, through the playing card door, and down the stairs. The bell rang again, more impatiently this time. The fog swirled in through the open doorway. Out of it loomed the shape of a man, a young man. He looked a very odd young man.
Yes? Yes, what is it? What do you want?
Don't you recognize me?
No. Should I?
No. I'm travelling incognito. It's foggy and damp, and standing there in the doorway, you'll get cold.
Look, would you mind telling me who you are and what you want?
I could be the Baron von Duffy, looking for a new stately home. I might buy this place. Cash. The entire grounds, fabric and all.
It's not for sale.
You doubt me. But it could be true, couldn't it? You don't know for a fact that I'm not the Baron von Duffy?
I neither know nor care. Do you know what time it is?
Sorry. It's the jalopy, my car. Over there, down the drive, ran out of petrol.
Well, why didn't you say so in the first place? I can't see a car.
You wouldn't in this fog, would you? But it's there. It's your phone I'm after. Big property deal. I want to buy land here, you see. I also want a gallon of petrol, or I have to walk home. My feet would get sore. Do you have a phone?
Yes, there's a phone. Come in.
You... all alone in this great big house.
The phone is there on the table.
Thanks.
Don't mention it.
Why are you staring at me like that? I don't like being stared at. We Baron von Duffys are human, you know.
The strange young man walked over to the telephone. Emma studied him. He was tall, with long, lank hair, an inscrutable face, and a nasty habit of clicking the fingers of his right hand together for no reason. The left hand was covered with a black leather glove. He paused as he was about to lift the receiver and said,
"Plastic surgery. That's why you didn't recognize me. Plastic surgery. Had my face fixed. Amazing what they can do nowadays."
"Will you please make your call?"
Incidentally, I'm not the Baron von Duffy. He's a much smaller man. Also, he's dead."
"If you don't make that call..."
"All right. All right. All right. I'll make the call. This is like a movie situation, isn't it? Tender young girl alone in an old house. Mysterious stranger calls. May I use your phone? She admits him. And then... da-da-da-da. The wires have been cut."
"What are you talking about?"
"It's true."
The strange young man picked up the telephone wires and held them out to Emma. They'd been cut all right.
Da-da-da-da-da-da.
The Avengers.
The weekend down at Sir Cavalier Rausicana's country home had started very mysteriously and had become more sinister with every hour that passed. Mrs. Peel, deserted by her host and his ward, had thought of an early night, curled up in her four-poster bed with a pleasant novel, untroubled by the fog which was sweeping across Exmoor and enveloping the old house like a white, damp shroud. Mrs. Peel was not a nervous person. She was too used to unusual situations and well capable of taking care of herself, but she was extremely puzzled by the whole affair. John Steed, on the other hand, was more than puzzled. He was frankly very anxious. He'd phoned George Fancy, who, reliable as ever, had called round.
"Come in, George, come in."
"What's the trouble, Steed?"
"I'm not sure, but someone put this across my stairs."
Steed held out the device, which was a steel, retractable tripwire.
"The moment I tripped, it broke contact and retracted into the metal base, which was fixed neatly into the corner of the stairs. I was lucky. Could have been far worse than a sprained ankle."
"Oh, cunning little gadget. Nasty. And you think that..."
"I don't know what to think, but I can't take any chances. If this is Max Prendergast up to his old tricks, then Mrs. Peel may be in more danger than I am. She's down at this place, Rausicana Hall. Did you find out anything about it?"
"Yes, yes, I did. It's near a place called Little Dayton."
"Got the phone number?"
"I have, and I tried it. Thought it would save time. It didn't. The phone is dead. Tried twice. Must be something wrong with the line. They have a very thick fog down there, according to the radio."
"Hmm. Can't see why that should affect the phones. Are you sure?"
"Oh, yes, yes, quite sure. Try for yourself if you like, but you won't get through."
"Yeah, I don't think I can let it slide."
"Yeah, neither do I. Another thing, Sir Cavalier Rausicana left this country 4 days ago on a holiday abroad. Officially, that house is empty."
"Oh, well, that decides it. Little Dayton. That's the other side of Exmoor, isn't it?"
"Yes, yes."
"It'll take us some time to get there."
"If we get there, this fog. Thicker than a pea soup in that area. We may not get through."
"We've got to get through. Oh, blast this ankle. I think I can drive the car."
Don't worry about that. I'll do it. Come on, I'll give you a hand with your hat and coat."
George Fancy walked across to the hall stand. He picked up Steed's thick overcoat and bowler hat. As he did so, a card fluttered to the floor.
"What the devil is that?"
"Playing card? How very odd. Must have been inside your bowler. A joker."
"Let me see that."
"Here. Oh!
What's that? What's wrong?"
"Cut myself. Oh, look. There's a razor blade on the back of the card, stuck on with transparent tape. Edge just level with the side of the card. Darn fool thing for anyone to...
George?"
"Steed, I..."
"George, what is it?"
"Steed, I..."
"George?"
It was meant for you."
"George! George!"
George made no reply. He couldn't. He was dead. The fog grew worse. It wrapped around the old house at Little Dayton, pressing white and clammy against the casement windows. Emma Peel watched the strange young man as in the scullery he hunted through the drawers for something with which to repair the telephone connection.
"Any luck?"
"Nothing. Not even a pair of pliers. Wire and pliers. That's what you need to fix that phone.
Oh, I've tried the extension upstairs, too. That's also out of order.
Out of order? I wouldn't call cut wires out of order. More likely deliberately disabled.
But that's ridiculous. I mean, why and who?
You.
You're out of your mind. Now, why?
To keep me here.
Just why would I want to do that?
Oh, I've got vitality, charm.
You've got an over-vivid imagination. I don't think you're at all vital. And to me, you're utterly devoid of charm. The only thing I find at all interesting about you is your ability to lie. Why did you come here?
I told you. Ran out of petrol.
This house is a good half a mile off the road. Why come here?
I saw the lights. Thought the petrol would just about last out and I'd be able to phone.
What lights? There were very few on. You can't see the house from the road in this fog. It would be impossible.
All right. I knew the house was here.
Who were you coming to see?
No one. I told you I'm interested in property. It's my business. Stately homes and all that sort of thing. The Baron von Duchy...
is dead.
So he is. So he is. He's dead, and I'm here. Alone in this great big house with you.
I'm not alone.
Oh, come on now. You can't tell me there's someone hidden.
I shan't be alone for long, anyway. Sir Cavalier, the owner of this house, is due back at any moment.
In this fog? He'll never make it. No one will.
And his ward, Ola, only went to the village. She'll be back soon.
Ola? She's dead. Like the Baron Duffy. Dead. I killed her.
The strange young man picked up the bloodied knife that was stuck in the table. He flourished it at Mrs. Peel.
Take a look in the garden. That's Ola, all over. You see, I said I was traveling incognito, didn't I? It's a fact. I'm really Jack the Ripper.
Mrs. Peel looked at him calmly and coldly.
You could be anybody. I only know one thing. You're a bore. It's late. I'm tired. I want to go to bed.
In that case, would you like me to tuck you up?
The young man put down the knife and stretched an arm round Mrs. Peel's waist.
Mistake. No one does that, unless I want them to. Come on.
Mrs. Peel frog-marched the strange young man out of the scullery, through the kitchen and into the hall.
Hey! Now look here!
Out! I've had enough of your nonsense.
You're really throwing me out?
I'm really throwing you out.
On a night like this?
What's the matter, baby? Are you scared? Out.
Look, I feel safer back here. It's dreadful outside. Look at the fog. Mark you, this place is too creepy. You can tell the owner it's not grand enough for my retinue.
Out!
All right. I know when I'm not wanted. Oh, by the way, I take it back about you being alone, I mean. I don't think you are alone in the house. Don't believe me? Then take a look at the dining room. Bye.
As John Steed drove further into the country, the conditions became worse. He was anxious to get down to Exmoor as quickly as possible, but the fog reduced his speed to a snail's pace. Eventually...
the devil... I stent or something. That's all I need. Oh, well, here goes.
Steed crawled from the car, groped his way to the bonnet, to find that the car radiator was hard up against a signpost. Steed, who was carrying a torch, shone the beam upwards and read,
"From this vantage point, you have a breathtaking view of four counters." I'll settle for a hand in front of my face.
Steed limped back to the car with not the foggiest idea of where he was. Emma Peel, remembering the parting words of the young man she'd just thrown out of the house, went through into the dining room. The candles were gutting, but by their light she could see that someone had been in the room. The place at the bottom end of the table had been used. There were the remains of food on the plate, a little wine in the glass, and a cigar butt smouldered in the ashtray. Mrs. Peel left the room rather hurriedly and made for her bedroom. At the top of the stairs, she paused. The revolving door now showed the playing card of the Joker facing outwards. So someone had gone through towards the bedrooms.
Joker is right. All right, whoever you are. I'll get ready for you.
Mrs. Peel entered her room and found it normal and welcoming. She crossed to her suitcase and opened it, taking out a revolver.
Fire first, ask questions later. I'm ready.
Down in the fog-shrouded garden, the young man stumbled through the bushes and stopped as he encountered Ola.
How did you get on?
I think I worried her. I really think I worried her.
Just worried?
Funniest caper I've ever been on. Why try to scare her to death?
I've told you it's a joke, a practical joke.
Well, take my word for it, that one doesn't scare easily. I've done my job. I want to be paid off.
Of course, but you haven't finished yet. You have to scream first.
Okay, I'll give you a real blood curdler. Ah! That good enough?
No. No, I'm afraid it isn't. I think we need the real thing, don't you?
Ula turned and looked over her shoulder. The bushes parted. The huge figure of a man loomed out of the fog. A large, hairy hand tightened its grip around a pistol.
No! No!
No! Ula, a wry smile on her face, watched the killer move towards the back of the house.
Oh, tonight is going to be such fun. I shall see all sorts of super things. I do love watching. So interesting. Such fun.
In the house, Mrs. Peel was beginning to think that the whole weekend was far from fun. She'd gone up to her room and prepared for any eventuality, a loaded revolver at her side. She settled herself in a comfortable chair at the foot of the four-poster bed and stretched out a hand for her book. It wasn't there. Mrs. Peel frowned and looked about the room.
The last time that happened, I found a rocking chair moving for no apparent reason. This time, could it be the window?
Mrs. Peel got up and moved to the window. It was then that she noticed a vase of roses on the floor. Had the curtains knocked the vase over? The wind?
In this fog? Most unlikely.
Mrs. Peel stooped and picked up the vase. The stems of the flowers remained in it. The heads of the roses lay on the floor. They had been deliberately snipped off.
Useless. Malicious and totally pointless thing to do. Kinky.
She moved to the table, where she found her book and opened it.
What the devil?
She stared down at a distorted portrait of herself. It was a cut-out picture from a glossy magazine, cut up. Pasted down into a vicious gargoyle, a travesty of a face. One eye dropped out into her open hand.
Did I think someone was kinky? Brother, are they sick?
At that moment, the telephone rang.
Steed, it's just got to be John Steed.
Mrs. Peel left the room at top speed. She hurried down the corridor, swung the revolving door round, and belted down the stairs. In the hall, she picked up the telephone.
Steed? Steed?
The line was dead. Mrs. Peel found herself staring at the wires. They were cut. She remembered they had been cut half an hour ago. Even Mrs. Peel was a trifle unnerved. And then, from the kitchen, there came the sound of a door banging. Mrs. Peel went to investigate. The back door was open.
Well, let's hope whoever it is has gone out for good.
Mrs. Peel decided it was going to be a heavy night. She put a kettle on, and it was at that point that she heard the sound of the small bell Ula had left on the dining room table. Next stop, the dining room. Mrs. Peel made it in record time.
Who is it? Who's there?
No one.
Who's in here? Who rang that bell?
The bell lay on its side, rolling gently to and fro. Mrs. Peel turned to go when she heard the voice.
What? Who's there?
Emma. Dearest Emma.
The voice seemed to echo through the house. Was it upstairs? Mrs. Peel moved to the stairs.
Emma. Emma, I'm here. I've come back to you. Emma.
Mrs. Peel moved up the stairs. At the top, the revolving card door showed not the Joker as she'd left it, but the death card.
Someone is playing Joker. Well?
She pushed her way through the door and then heard the music. It came from her own room. Emma Peel remembered having seen a very old gramophone in the corner. She also recalled the coffin-shaped chest, which was filled with old 78 records, all of them this tune. She got to her room just as the record finished.
Now, who the devil put that on? I'm fed up with this.
Mrs. Peel, in a sudden outburst which was quite uncharacteristic of her, tore the record from the turntable and smashed it over her knee.
Nerves. That's what they're trying to do. whittle me down with all these melodramatic tricks. Am I falling for it? Oh, not that again. The rocking chair. Well, this time I'm all set and raring to go. The far room.
Characteristically, Mrs. Peel entered the far room at top speed. She slammed the door open. She stopped dead. For there, in the rocking chair, was a man. He was swaying to and fro.
Right. Stay where you are. Don't move.
The body turned as it fell. The strange young man lay on his back. A bullet hole darkened the center of his forehead. You can't get more dead than dead. John Steed, intent on getting to Mrs. Peel as swiftly as possible, was crawling his way through the fog. He was driving more by instinct than anything else. He knew he was heading west. Otherwise, he had to admit he was lost.
Well, this is it. Night in the fog. Stuck. Lost.
Hey, you there?
Yeah. Hey, you'll be out on a right rough night, mister.
You don't know a place called Rousicana Hall, do you?
I should think I do, too.
Well, that's where I'm heading. How much further?
You'll be turning into the driveway right this minute, mister. It'll be there under your very nose, and you can't be seeing it.
What do you mean? You mean this is it?
Yeah, that's right. Just turn up the driveway. Blow me down right on the spot and don't know it. Night to you.
Good night. Well, first bit of luck I've had today.
The luck didn't last all that long.
Now what?
It was Emma Peel's car. Ulla had left it carelessly parked halfway across the drive. Steed groped his way forward and recognized the car.
Mrs. Peel! Mrs. Peel!
Steed's voice seemed to echo through the heavy fog. Clutching his stick, he limped up the driveway. Best foot forward, Steed. The other one's not much good. Mrs. Peel left the small room at the end of the corridor, determined to get the police immediately. She was on her way downstairs when she heard it.
That record again.
Emma. Emma.
And the voice.
Emma. Dear Emma. I'm down here, Emma. Downstairs.
Mrs. Peel, still clutching her gun, walked slowly along the corridor, through the revolving car door,
dear,
and onto the stairs.
Emma.
Where are you?
Here, Emma.
And who are you?
An old friend. A very old friend. Don't be frightened. I don't want to frighten you, dear Emma.
Just step out where I can see you.
A quiet little chat. That's all I want. About old times.
I don't know you. Show yourself. Where are you?
Everywhere. Everywhere. Anywhere you run to, I'll be there. I am inescapable. I may be right over here. Or just by your shoulder. You can't see me, but I can stretch out a hand and touch you.
Mrs. Peel made for the front door.
The key. Come to me, Emma. You can't get away. Come.
Stop.
No. That way.
Let me out.
Which way will you go?
No! Let me out! Let me out! No.
Oh, here. Oh. Right. Here. Oh. Everywhere you go.
No.
I shall be. I am
no.
Everywhere waiting for you, Emma, my dear.
Let me out!
Wait for you. To hold you in my arms.
No.
My
no.
arms.
No!
Come to me, Emma. You can't get
Stop
away.
It.
Come
Stop
to me.
Stop it! Stop it!
Frightened? You are frightened
no.
now, aren't you, Emma Peel?
No.
Frightened at last. I'm over here, Emma Peel, at the top of the stairs. Come to me, Emma Peel.
Mrs. Peel looked up the stairs. The revolving door was slowly moving. The Joker turned inwards. Facing her was the death card. Mrs. Peel shot up the stairs at top speed and swung the door round.
Where are you? Come on. Come out and face me. I'm not the frightened, lily-livered one. I don't hide behind voices. Where are you?
Here, Emma.
What?
Mrs. Peel swung round. There was no one there. Just the grinning face of the Joker on the door.
Try your bedroom. I might be there. Waiting for you, waiting to hold you in my arms. Still, Emma.
Just come near enough to try, that's all.
But I am here. Very near. Try the bed, Emma. Behind the curtains of the four-poster bed.
There, sitting up in bed, his eyes staring out at her, was the dead young man. Mrs. Peel felt her nerves cracking.
Filthy, foul, crazy madman. Where are you?
Listen, Emma.
Downstairs. That music is coming from downstairs. All right. One thing at a time. I don't know how you're doing these trick voices, but you can't put on a gramophone without using a gramophone. There's one in here. That's not it. The other one is down in the study.
Mrs. Peel ignored the laughter that seemed to follow her wherever she went. She made her way down to the study. Yes, there was the gramophone, with the old 78 record playing on it.
Don't you like that tune, Emma? You should remember it. It was a favorite when we knew each other. I'm over here, Emma. I really am. I'm in the dining room. Want to come to me, Emma?
The voice did sound as though it was from the dining room. Mrs. Peel entered cautiously.
Where are you? Are you really in here?
Oh, yes. Yes, I'm here. At the head of the table.
The candles on the table were nearly out, spluttering and flickering. The end of the table was in deep shadow. But there was a man sitting there, a menacing figure hunched in the high-backed chair. The man moved, stretched out an enormous, hairy hand, and took an apple, a green, hard apple, from the dish in front of him. He polished it gently.
Why not come a little nearer, Emma Peel?
Mrs. Peel did so, still keeping her gun trained in the direction of the voice. It was then that she noticed the photograph of herself on the table.
Yes, your face was always perfect, so symmetrical. Not a thing out of place. It's such a pleasure to see you again, Emma. I've thought of you often, you know. I like to think that just once in a while you've thought of me.
Who are you?
Remember the song, Emma. Mamselle. Paris. Eating apples by the Seine.
The hairy hand clutched at the apple, tightened around it, crushing it to pulp.
I could crush your scalp just as easily as I can this apple.
No chance. Keep both hands on the table and tell me who you are.
You still don't know? That tune doesn't tell you?
Move into the light. Then I'll know.
Paris. Not so long ago. I think for one reason or another, Paris is the most exciting city in the world.
Emma and Steve have just about wrapped this up. But, unfortunately, I do have another break here. We'll be back soon.
Exciting city in the world. It certainly was in our day. And it is certainly the most dangerous.
It can only be one person. Max Prendergast.
There, you see. You knew all along, didn't you?
Max Prendergast.
You were always teasing me so charmingly.
He picked up another apple, lifted a very sharp knife, and began slicing it. The hairy hands delicately popping each segment into his flabby mouth.
Those days were all too few, Emma. But I shall always be grateful for them. Oh, and grateful to you. Do you remember that last day?
There is little or nothing about you that I care to remember.
I was leaving for Rio. But I had to see you before I left.
Ah! Yes, I forgot.
Had you? I hadn't, you know. You wouldn't let me leave. I kept telling you I had a plane to catch, but you wouldn't let me go. You flattered me outrageously. How could I refuse?
What is it you want?
A chat. Just a chat. A quiet chat.
Why go to all this trouble if all you want is a talk?
Oh, it was no trouble. I've been enjoying myself. Did you like the roses in your room? There were roses in the room that day, and we kept playing the tune, Mademoiselle. I thought you were my mademoiselle. It wasn't quite fair, you know, to have kept me there with the roses and the music. You knew I wanted to take that plane. And there was that man. What was his name? Steed. John Steed. You flattered me, flirted with me until he came. And then there was a nasty scene. Do you remember? The police and the arrest.
You deserved everything you got. You sold people from east to west as though they were cattle.
Oh, my dear, a few insignificant refugees.
No human being is insignificant. Not those few refugees or that man upstairs. Did you have to kill him?
Man upstairs? Oh, him. Yes, I had to kill him.
Just like that.
It was your fault. You shouldn't have made me miss that plane. I loved you, Emma, and you betrayed
me. And I hated you and what you did and what you were. People like you have to be stopped. If I had to do it all over again, I would. I'd use any trick to see you behind bars, Prendergast.
They destroyed me in there, in that place, being locked up all those years. It killed me. I died. They give you magazines in there, in that place. Your face often appeared. Whenever I saw your picture, I always cut it out with plastic scissors. They let you have plastic scissors. They aren't very sharp, you see. Not as sharp as this knife.
Prendergast stood up. Mrs. Peel had forgotten what a giant of a man he was. He advanced slowly down the length of the table, holding the knife out towards her. Mrs. Peel, gun at the ready, backed into the hall.
Keep away now. Stand back or I'll drop you.
In the hallway, Mrs. Peel stopped. From the top of the stairs, a voice said...
Oh, how exciting! A knife and a gun!
Ola!
That's right. And I've got a gun, too.
You see, I'm not alone anymore, Emma. I found someone who understands me, who's in sympathy with me.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
Ola, do you know what kind of a man he is? Do you have any idea?
He's going to kill you. He said I could watch.
Max advanced on Emma, knife outstretched.
You're asking for it. You're going to make me kill you.
I'm dead, Emma. You can't kill me twice.
Oh, what fun. You said I could watch.
Then watch this.
Your gun's only got blanks in it. Mine hasn't.
Ula fired. Mrs. Peel ducked and threw her gun at Ula. It was a good shot, catching her under the chin. Mrs. Peel didn't wait for more. She shot up the stairs, grabbed Ula's hand that held the gun. It dropped, skidded through the banisters into the hall.
Leave me. No.
Mrs. Peel got a hold on Ula and threw her at the revolving door. She went through it, spinning it off its central pivot, and landed unconscious on the other side.
Here goes!
Mrs. Peel swung over the banisters and dropped into the hall. She made for Ulla's gun, but...
Too late.
Mrs. Peel was looking down the wrong end of it.
No, no. A bullet would be too quick. Too quick.
Prendergast moved in. Mrs. Peel tackled him. In the struggle, the candelabra was knocked over. Mrs. Peel found the hairy hands grasping her throat, squeezing, squeezing.
My mamselle. Die, 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 my mamselle. That lovely face, let me cut it, as I get so many photographs. Now!
Prendergast had the strength of a madman. Mrs. Peel's eyes glazed as the pressure on her throat increased.
The knife! The knife!
Prendergast forced Mrs. Peel to her knees. He bent over her to deliver the coup de grace. Then it seemed as though the roof fell in.
Spot of bother, Mrs. Peel.
Just a little, Steve. I must say you play your cards at the right time. That's Max Prendergast. He escaped from jail.
Not for long. Thought I'd give you a lift home. That is, unless you want to stay for the rest of the weekend.
You've just got to be joking, Steve.
Oh, I'm no joker. He is. There's one in every pack, you know. Well, fog's lifting. Want to go home, Mrs. Peel?
Listen every evening, Monday to Friday, to John Steed and Emma Peel, The Avengers. Brought to you by the makers of Coldwater Omo. The Avengers. Donald Monat as John Steed and Diane Appleby as Emma Peel is adapted and directed by Dennis Faulbig and produced by David Gooden.
I don't know. If you're a fan of the Avengers, maybe you're a little disappointed now. I kind of am. I mean, in my mind, Emma Peel does not behave like a scared little girl. And there is that whole scene there where Emma is just terrified. That wasn't right. Emma Peel might kick somebody in the face, but I don't think she's just going to scream and scream and scream like that. I never did figure out why the Joker was quite so annoyed with her. I mean, there was something about Paris and something that happened there between them. It wasn't clear to me exactly what. It isn't even really exactly clear to me if it was real. And then I just wrapped up so quickly there at the end. Steed appears, and off they go. Still, I did like the characters. I did like that kinky young woman. Maybe I should just listen to it again. Maybe I will. Anyway, next up is an episode of Suspense from July the 7th of 1955 called Kaleidoscope. It's based on a Ray Bradbury story, which originally appeared in Ray's 1951 volume of 18 short stories called The Illustrated Man. There are a couple of other really famous short stories in that. The Veldt is in there. The Rocket Man is in there. As is Marionettes Incorporated and The Rocket. Anyway, here it is.
And now, tonight's presentation of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. Tonight, we depart from the usual to bring you a play from one of the greatest authors of science fiction, Mr. Ray Bradbury. It is the story of a last voyage in a spaceship and the six men who took it. So now, starring Mr. William Conrad, here is tonight's suspense play, Kaleidoscope.
She was a spaceship cargo carrier, 7 years old, with over 1.5 miles lost in her wake. Within her metallic skin was the world of the crew, an atom of life surrounded by a vast expanse of nothingness. The ship and the crew were owned by the company, a third-class vessel operated by third-class personnel, and each of us hoping that in our day would come promotion to second class, or even to first, and the great hushed passenger liners, which were also owned by the company. The company ran everything. There wasn't anyone else to work for. And you accepted what was given. Not gratefully, but with hope. There were 19 of us to begin with on a routine voyage. Our cargo, seasoned lumber. I was at control on the second day out. Stone navigating.
On the nose.
Good. Control, bearing mark, Captain.
Right.
Hollis, where's the captain?
In his cabin.
On the bottle again.
Why don't you ask him?
I don't have to, Stoney. I can smell him all the way in.
You want something, Applegate?
Sea tube's blowing again.
It isn't showing on the indicator.
I can't help that.
Wait a minute. Captain, control.
Yeah.
Applegate reports sea tube blowing, sir.
Oh?
It doesn't show on the indicator, sir.
All right. I'll be right there.
Now, what was the idea of that?
What?
Telling him it didn't show. You're trying to louse me up?
You better keep check on that tube.
Who's giving orders?
I am.
Oh, my sash to you, friend.
Oh, come on, Applegate. I don't want to blow up. I've got 2 weeks of pay coming when we get back.
Here, give me a power check, will you?
Sure.
Something must be haywire with the indicator.
Get it straightened out, Hollis.
She's not firing in sequence, sir. Heating up, too.
Let me see. I don't like this. Rockets, who's the captain?
Simpson, sir. It's sea tube, I think. Heating the others, too. Lock off's frozen.
Use emergency.
Stand by.
Come on, come on.
Control, this is Applegate. Emergency doesn't answer. It's getting too hot.
Maybe it'll answer from here, sir.
Applegate, get your men out of there. Stand by to abandon.
Keep going, sir. Shall I sound the alarm?
Yes. Here's the captain. This is the captain. Get into your suits. You've got about 2 minutes, maybe less. Get into your suits. The ship is going to explode. Get into your suits. Abandon. Abandon. Get into your suits.
The concussion cut the spaceship up the side like a giant can opener. Those of us who weren't immediately killed were thrown into space like wriggling silverfish, scattered into a dark sea. And the ship, in a million pieces, went on, a meteor swarm seeking a lost sun.
Captain! Stone! Where are you?
The sound of our voices calling like lost children on a cold night.
Captain! Who called?
Hollis. Hollis, this is Stone.
Hello!
Stone! Stone, this is Hollis. Where are you?
I don't know. How can I? Which way is up?
I'm falling. Oh, God, I'm falling. We're going away from each other.
Who is that? This is the captain. Who is that?
Lester!
Captain!
Where are you?
Lester!
We were hurtling in space in every direction. And now instead of men, there were only voices. Voices communicating by radio phone. All kinds of voices, disembodied and impassioned in varying degrees of terror and resignation. All moving away from one another. We were wearing our sealed-tight spacesuits with glass tubes over our faces. But there hadn't been time to lock on the propulsion units. Not time enough. And without them, we were meteors, senseless, each going to a separate and irrevocable fate.
This is the captain. I want a roll call. Who is that?
This is Applegate.
Sir? Applegate. Next?
Lespere.
Who?
Lespere.
Simpson.
Lespere. Simpson.
Dawn.
Hollis.
Anybody else? Anyone else? Stone to Hollis. How long can we talk, Captain?
Well, it depends on how fast you're going your way and I'm going mine.
An hour, I make it. What happened?
The rocket blew up. Didn't you feel it? That's all. Rockets do blow up. Which way are you going?
It looks like I'll hit the moon.
Well, it's Earth for me.
That's nice.
Back to old Mother Earth at 10,000 miles an hour. I'll burn like a match when I hit the atmosphere. Well, Stone's going to the moon. I know where I'd like to see Applegate go.
I don't want to die. I don't want to die. It's a long way down.
Who's that?
I don't know.
Stimson, I think. Stimson, is that you? This is Hollis.
It's a long, long way, and I don't like it. I don't like
Stimson,
it.
Stimson, this is Hollis. Stimson, do you hear me? Stimson?
Yes?
You take it easy now.
I don't want to
We're
be
all
here.
In the same fix.
I don't want to be here afraid.
There's a chance we'll be found.
I heard that. Oh, what a liar you are, Hollis.
You shut up, Applegate.
So come and make me. Come on, Hollis. Come and make me shut up. I don't believe this. I don't believe any of this is happening. Not to me. It's a bad dream.
Now, take it easy, Stimson.
Hey, you know, I don't feel so bad.
Who's that?
It's me, Stone Lespierre. I was just thinking. I've had a pretty good time. Lots of good time. Hey, did I ever tell you about my wife?
Which one?
Who's that?
Applegate.
Oh, sure. How do you feel, Applegate?
Oh, why don't you shut up?
No kidding about my wife, the one on Mars. Did I ever tell you?
That's enough. This is the captain. We've got to figure a way out of this. Make a plan.
My size to you,
Captain. What did you say?
Oh, you heard me. Don't try pulling rank on me. You're 10,000 miles away by now.
You listen to me, Applegate.
Consider this a mutiny of one, Captain. Hang me. Kill me. Look, I want to tell you something. Your ship was a bad ship, and you were a bad captain, and I hope you break wherever you're going.
I'm ordering you to stop, Applegate.
Be my guest. Order me some more. You're going to put me in chains till we land? Marseille to you, Captain.
Hey, fellas, let me tell you about my wife, the one on Venus. It doesn't matter now. I guess anybody can know now. Oh, listen, I had it real good. One wife on Mars, another on Venus, one on Jupiter. Oh, boy, what a time. Hey, Stone.
Yeah?
Remember the time we put into Marsport for repairs?
I remember.
Well, that's when I met the first one. You know what those Mars girls are like. Well.
Lespierre went on and on with his talk about his wives and interplanetary bigamists. His money, his wonderful times, drunkenness, gambling. On and on, while we fell in space away from each other. Lespierre reminiscing on the past, happy while he fell to his death. Space. Thousands of miles of space and the voice vibrating in the center of it. No one visible at all, only the radio waves quivering and trying to quicken other men into emotion.
I tell you, when a man's had a life like I've had, it's not so bad. Not much left for me to do, I guess.
Men, this is the captain. I want you to know that I'm very grateful for your loyalty. You've been a good crew. Hollis, Stone, if you get out of this, I have you both posted for a promotion. It'll go through when you report. Applegate, I wish that...
Captain? Captain?
Then the one on meteorite got him. Any takers?
Hollis! Hollis, can you think of something? Something to do?
Why ask him, Stimson? I'll tell you something to do. Make it quick, easy. Open the valve on your suit.
We're finished, all of us.
Who cares? No one's going to cry over me.
And we fell through space. Five of us living. Each in his orbit of loneliness. Moving away from the other. From this outer edge of my life, looking back, there was one remorse. And that, only that I wish I could go on living.
All dying people feel that way, Hollis.
What? Oh, Stone, I didn't know I was thinking out loud. It's funny, as if I'd never lived.
Yeah, I know.
Hollis? Hey, Hollis.
What is it?
It's Applegate again.
All right, what?
Let's you and me talk.
Go ahead.
You hate my guts, don't you?
I never thought much about it.
Now, don't give me that. You and that superior way of yours. I want to tell you something. I was the one who blackballed you with the rocket company 5 years ago. Did you hear me?
I heard you.
Well, how does that make you feel?
Nothing.
You wanted to get to the top all your life, I know. I'll bet you always wondered what happened. Well, it was me. See, I put the black mark on you before I was tossed out myself.
It isn't important.
Well, I had a good time. Yeah, it's a good thing to think about, too. I had a wife on Mars, Venus, one in Jupiter.
So you said,
Mr. And I'm saying it again. I like to think about it. They all had money, too. Oh, yes, they treated me just fine. You know, once I got drunk and gambled $20,000 in one night. Just like that. Oh, it's been a good life.
But you're here now, Lester. I didn't have any of those things. I was jealous of you, funny little man. How did you rate it? The women, the good times. Women frightened me. And I went into space always wanting them. Jealous of you for having them. And money. And as much happiness as man could want. Well, I'm not jealous anymore, though. Because it's over for you just the way it is for me. Now it's like it never was. It's all over, Lespierre. It just never was. You hear me, Lespierre?
Who's there?
It's Hollis. Do you hear me? You're out here, Lespierre, falling, dying. It's all over. Just as if it never happened, isn't it?
No. It happened.
When anything's over, it's just like it never happened. Where's your life any better than mine now, huh? Now's what counts. Is it any better? Is it?
Yes, it's better.
How?
Because I've got my thoughts. Good thoughts. I remember.
Thoughts. What good? What good are they? You gonna be rescued? You gonna live more than a few hours?
I'm resting easy. I've had my turn. I'm not getting vicious at the end. Not like you.
Vicious? This.
Take it easy, Hollis.
I know how you feel, Hollis. I don't take it personally. You're all right. I always thought that.
Hey, what?
What's the matter?
I can see something.
Down.
Yeah, I can see lights. They look like lights.
But where?
What?
Where? Where are you?
Must be a ship. Maybe they'll see us. Which way are you going, Stone? It's lights, I tell you. I can see a plane.
Which way? Which way? Where are you, Stone? Where?
Hey. Guess what?
Huh? What? Stone?
What is it?
What?
I got myself into a meteor swarm, little asteroid.
Meteors?
Yes, I think it's the Myrmidon cluster. You know, Hollis, the one that goes out past Mars and in toward Earth once every 5 years. Well, I'm right in the middle.
Stone?
It's like a big kaleidoscope. That's what I thought with the lights. All kinds of colors and shapes. It's beautiful. All that metal. I'm going with them. They're taking me with them. I'll be...
Stone!
So long, Hollis. So long.
Good luck, Stone!
Don't be funny.
I looked. There was nothing. Only the great diamonds and sapphire and emerald mist. And velvet inks of space. And then in the sudden calmness of his going, there was a kind of wonder in the thought of Stone going off in the meteor swarm, out past Mars for years, and coming in toward Earth every 5 years, passing in and out for the next million centuries.
Alice, this is Lester. You all right?
Yes, I'm fine.
I can't hear you so good. You there? Hollis?
This is Hollis. I'm okay. You?
Hollis, there must be something wrong with the phone. Hollis? Can you hear me? Say something, will you?
Turn up the booster.
Turn up your booster.
Hollis, can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
Hey, that's fine now, yeah. Oh, I thought you were gone. Who are you talking to?
The Don.
Hey, who else is around?
Applegate. Applegate.
I'm here.
Simpson.
Hey, Simpson. I guess he's gone, too.
Can you see anything?
I wasn't looking. I was thinking. I figure I'll hit Mars. Mars. Wouldn't that be something if I landed in the wife's backyard? She'd get a kick out of that. That's pretty funny, huh?
Is that you, Applegate?
No. I thought it was you.
Hollis?
No, it must be Simpson. Simpson!
I want to wake up! Mama! I want to wake up!
Make him stop, will you?
Samson, shut him up! Samson, will you listen to me? Now, Samson, listen to me. Applegate's right. It'll be easier. You open your valve. Open it. Listen to me, Samson. Open your valve. Now. Do it now. It won't hurt. Only a second, Samson. Open your mouth, Simpson!
Hollis? Applegate?
Yeah.
Has he gone?
I guess so.
Oh. Hey, anybody know what time it is?
Oh, what do you care?
What'd you say? Applegate, the boost is fading. What did you say?
I don't know.
Oh, well, I guess it doesn't matter. Habit, I suppose. You mind if I keep talking? Kind of passes the time.
The goodbyes, voices dying, men dying. The awareness of life, my own. What can I do? Is there anything I can do to make up for a terrible and empty life? If only I could do one good thing to make up for the meanness I collected all these years and didn't even know was in me.
Hollis? Hollis, this is Applegate.
Yes?
Hollis, that was right what you told Stimson to do. I said it to make him feel bad, but you did it right.
I murdered him.
No, you didn't. Listen, Hollis, this isn't good, this thing between you and me. It's a bad way to die. Are you listening, Hollis?
Yes, I'm listening.
I lied. I didn't blackball you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Listening to your talk when you were saying those things to Lespierre about it not mattering, and he said about you being vicious, made me ashamed. I've been like that, too.
It's all right. They understand. Can you get Lespierre?
No. No, he was gone an hour ago. Can you hear him?
No. Last thing I heard, he was singing a dirty song.
Quite a guy.
Yeah.
You're fading out.
You too.
What?
I hope everything's okay with you, Applegate. I hope you go to heaven or wherever you want. I hope for you.
You're getting soft, Hollis. Better open your valve. So long.
Take it easy, Applegate.
So long, Hollis. Don't do anything I wouldn't do.
Applegate! So long.
Any time now, I'll hit the Earth's atmosphere. I'll burn and be scattered in ashes all over the continental lands. But I'll be put to use. Just a little bit, but ashes are ashes, and they'll add to the land.
Okay, one last break here, and then we'll be right back.
Any time now, I'll hit the Earth's atmosphere. I'll burn and be scattered in ashes all over the continental lands. But I'll be put to use. Just a little bit, but ashes are ashes, and they'll add to the land. I wanted to make something of my life. To be liked. To do good for people. To make them happy. Now it's all gone. I wish I could do a good thing. Just something for me to know about. When I hit the atmosphere, I'll burn like a meteor. I wonder if anyone will see me.
Time for bed, Sonny.
Okay. Hey.
Hmm?
Look up there, Ma. A falling star.
I saw it. Make a wish, dear. Make a wish.
Suspense, in which Mr. William Conrad starred in tonight's presentation of Kaleidoscope, written by Ray Bradbury. Suspense is produced and directed by Anthony Ellis, who adapted tonight's script. The music was composed by Rennie Garrigan and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. Special technical effects by Robert Chadwick. Featured in the cast were Stacey Harris, Parley Bear, Howard McNear, John Daner, Sam Edwards, Georgia Ellis, and Master Jonathan Ellis. This is the CBS Radio Network.
This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Cameron Halkett. A Reminiscence of Dr. Samuel Johnson by H. P. Lovecraft. The privilege of reminiscence, however rambling or tiresome, is one generally allowed to the very aged. Indeed, 'tis frequently by means of such recollections that the obscure occurrences of history and the lesser anecdotes of the great are transmitted to posterity. Though many of my readers have at times observed and remarked a sort of antique flow in my style of writing, it hath pleased me to pass amongst the members of this generation as a young man, giving out the fiction that I was born in 1890 in America. I am now, however, resolved to unburden myself of a secret which I have hitherto kept through dread of incredulity, and to impart to the public a true knowledge of my long years in order to gratify their taste for authentic information of an age with whose famous personages I was on familiar terms. Be it then known that I was born on the family estate in Devonshire of the 10th day of August, 1690, or in the new Gregorian style of reckoning, the 20th of August, being therefore now in my 228th year. Coming early to London, I saw as a child many of the celebrated men of King William's reign, including the lamented Mr. Dryden, who sat much at the tables of Will's Coffee House. With Mr. Addison and Dr. Swift I later became very well acquainted, and was an even more familiar friend to Mr. Pope, whom I knew and respected till the day of his death. But since it is of my more recent associate, the late Dr. Johnson, that I am at this time desired to write, I will pass over my youth for the present. I had first knowledge of the doctor in May of the year 1738, though I did not at that time meet him. Mr. Pope had just completed his epilogue to his satires, the piece beginning Not Twice a Twelvemonth You Appear in Print, and had arranged for its publication. On the very day it appeared, there was also published a satire in Imitation of Juvenal, entitled London by the then unknown Johnson, and this so struck the town that many gentlemen of taste declared it was the work of a greater poet than Mr. Pope. Notwithstanding what some detractors have said of Mr. Pope's petty jealousy, he gave the verses of his new rival no small praise, and, having learnt through Mr. Richardson who the poet was, told me that Mr. Johnson would soon be deterred. I had no personal acquaintance with the doctor till 1763, when I was presented to him at the Mitre Tavern by Mr. James Boswell, a young Scotchman of excellent family and great learning, but small wit, whose metrical effusions I had sometimes revised. Dr. Johnson, as I beheld him, was a full, pursy man, very ill-dressed and of slovenly aspect. I recall him to have worn a bushy bob-wig, untied and without powder, and much too small for his head. His clothes were of rusty brown, much wrinkled, and with more than one button missing. His face, too full to be handsome, was likewise marred by the effects of some scrofulous disorder, and his head was continually rolling about in a sort of convulsive way. Of this infirmity, indeed, I had known before, having heard of it from Mr. Pope, who took the trouble to make particular inquiries. Being nearly 73, full 19 years older than Dr. Johnson, I say doctor, though his degree came not till 2 years afterward, I naturally expected him to have some regard for my age, and was therefore not in that fear of him which others confessed. On my asking him what he thought of my favorable notice of his dictionary in the Londoner, my periodical paper, he said, "Sir, I possess no recollection of having perused your paper, and have not a great interest in the opinions of the less thoughtful part of mankind." Being more than a little piqued at the incivility of one whose celebrity made me solicitous of his approbation, I ventured to retaliate in kind and told him I was surprised that a man of sense should judge the thoughtfulness of one whose productions he admitted never having read. "Why, sir," replied Johnson, "I do not require to become familiar with a man's writings in order to estimate the superficiality of his attainments, when he plainly skews it by his eagerness to mention his own productions in the first question he puts to me." Having thus become friends, we conversed on many matters. When to agree with him, I said I was distrustful of the authenticity of Ossian's poems, Mr. Johnson said, "That, sir, does not do your understanding particular credit. For what all the town is sensible of is no great discovery for a Grub Street critic to make. You might as well say you have a strong suspicion that Milton wrote Paradise Lost." I thereafter saw Johnson very frequently, most often at meetings of the Literary Club, which was founded the next year by the doctor, together with Mr. Burke, the parliamentary orator, Mr. Beauclerk, a gentleman of fashion, Mr. Langton, a pious man and captain of militia, Sir J. Reynolds, the widely known painter, Dr. Goldsmith, the prose and poetic writer, Dr. Nugent, father-in-law to Mr. Burke, Sir John Hawkins, Mr. Anthony Charmier, and myself. We assembled generally at 7 o'clock of an evening, once a week, at the Turk's Head in Gerrard Street, Soho, till that tavern was sold and made into a private dwelling, after which event we moved our gatherings successively to Prince's in Sackville Street, Letelier's in Dover Street, and Parslow's and the Thatched House in St. James's Street. In these meetings we preserved a remarkable degree of amity and tranquillity, which contrasts very favorably with some of the dissensions and disruptions I observe in the literary and amateur press associations of today. This tranquillity was the more remarkable because we had amongst us gentlemen of very opposed opinions. Dr. Johnson and I, as well as many others, were high Tories, whilst Mr. Burke was a Whig and against the American War, many of his speeches on that subject having been widely published. The least congenial member was one of the founders, Sir John Hawkins, who hath since written many misrepresentations of our society. Sir John, an eccentric fellow, once declined to pay his part of the reckoning for supper because 'twas his custom at home to eat no supper. Later, he insulted Mr. Burke in so intolerable a manner that we all took pains to show our disapproval, after which incident he came no more to our meetings. However, he never openly fell out with the doctor and was the executor of his will, though Mr. Boswell and others have reason to question the genuineness of his attachment. Other and later members of the club were Mr. David Garrick, the actor and early friend of Dr. Johnson, Messrs. Thomas and Joseph Wharton, Dr. Adam Smith, Dr. Percy, author of The Reliquis, Mr. Edward Gibbon, the historian, Dr. Burney, the musician, Mr. Malone, the critic, and Mr. Boswell. Mr. Garrick obtained admittance only with difficulty, for the doctor, notwithstanding his great friendship, was forever affecting to decry the stage and all things connected with it. Johnson, indeed, had a most singular habit of speaking for Davy when others were against him, and of arguing against him when others were for him. I have no doubt that he sincerely loved Mr. Garrick, for he never alluded to him as he did to Foote, who was a very coarse fellow despite his comic genius. Mr. Gibbon was none too well liked, for he had an odious, sneering way which offended even those of us who most admired his historical productions. Mr. Goldsmith, a little man, very vain of his dress and very deficient in brilliancy of conversation, was my particular favorite, since I was equally unable to shine in the discourse. He was vastly jealous of Dr. Johnson, though nonetheless liking and respecting him. I remember that once a foreigner, a German, I think, was in our company, and that whilst Goldsmith was speaking, he observed the doctor preparing to utter something. Unconsciously looking upon Goldsmith as a mere encumbrance when compared to the greater man, the foreigner bluntly interrupted him and incurred his lasting hostility by crying, "Hush! Dr. Johnson is going to speak!" In this luminous company I was tolerated more because of my years than for my wit or learning, being no match at all for the rest. My friendship for the celebrated Monsieur Voltaire was ever a cause of annoyance to the doctor, who was deeply orthodox and who used to say of the French philosopher, "Vir est acerrimi ingeniae et pocarum literarum." Mr. Boswell, a little teasing fellow whom I had known for some time previously, used to make sport of my awkward manners and old-fashioned wig and clothes. Once coming in a little the worse for wine, to which he was addicted, he endeavored to lampoon me by means of an impromptu in verse writ on the surface of the table, but lacking the aid he usually had in his composition, he made a bad grammatical blunder. I told him he should not try to pasquinade the source of his poesy. At another time, Bozzy, as we used to call him, complained of my harshness toward new writers in the articles I prepared for the Monthly Review. He said I pushed every aspirant off the slopes of Parnassus. "Sir," I replied, "you are mistaken. They who lose their hold do so from their own want of strength, but desiring to conceal their weakness, they attribute the absence of success to the first critic that mentions them." I am glad to recall that Dr. Johnson upheld me in this matter. Dr. Johnson was second to no man in the pains he took to revise the bad verses of others. Indeed, 'tis said that in the book of poor blind old Mrs. Williams there are scarce two lines which are not the doctor's. At one time, Johnson recited to me some lines by a servant to the Duke of Leeds, which had so amused him that he had got them by heart. They are on the Duke's wedding, and so much resemble in quality the work of other and more recent poetic dunces that I cannot forbear copying them. "When the Duke of Leeds shall married be to a fine young lady of high quality, how happy will that gentlewoman be in his Grace of Leeds good company." I asked the doctor if he had ever tried making sense of this piece, and upon his saying he had not, I amused myself with the following amendment of it: "When gallant Leeds auspiciously shall wed the virtuous fair of ancient lineage bred, how must the maid rejoice with conscious pride to win so great an husband to her side." On showing this to Dr. Johnson, he said, "Sir, you have straightened out the feet, but you have put neither wit nor poetry into the lines." It would afford me gratification to tell more of my experiences with Dr. Johnson and his circle of wits, but I am an old man and easily fatigued. I seem to ramble along without much logic or continuity when I endeavor to recall the past, and I fear I light upon but few incidents which others have not before discussed. Should my present recollections meet with favor, I might later set down some further anecdotes of old times of which I am the only survivor. I recall many things of Sam Johnson and his club, having kept up my membership in the latter long after the doctor's death, at which I sincerely mourned. I remember how John Burgoyne, Esquire, the general, whose dramatic and poetical works were printed after his death, was blackballed by 3 votes, probably because of his unfortunate defeat in the American War at Saratoga. Poor John! His son fared better, I think, and was made a baronet. But I am very tired. I am old, very old, and it's time for my afternoon nap. End of A Reminiscence of Dr. Samuel Johnson, recorded by Cameron Halkett.
Hello.
Hello?
Undertaker.
What do you want?
I'm an undertaker. Anybody dead today?
What?
Anybody dead today?
No.
Oh, pity. Still, just checking.
I think you must have the wrong address.
No, no, just trying my luck. I'm freelance. So, you haven't got anyone you want buried?
No.
Sure, professionally, with discount.
Look, I think I would know if there was anybody here who was dead.
Nobody want just dumped?
No, thank you.
No bodies hanging around? Nothing?
No.
Still, no harm in asking.
Yes, thank you very much.
Be lucky. Oh,
Yes?
Anybody ill?
No!
Anybody a bit weak?
No, thank you.
You know, I don't mind waiting. I've got the hearse outside.
No, thank you very much indeed.
Who's the oldest in the house?
Why?
No reason. No reason. Any smokers live here?
No, look, we've all given up. Thank you very much.
You don't look too good.
I feel fine. Thank you.
Are you sure?
Never felt better now. Thank you very much.
That's often a sign. Perhaps I'd better stick around.
Go away!
Any elderly cats?
Go away!
Decrepit dogs, moribund mice?
Get out!
Terminal tortoises?
Go away! Bloody undertakers. Never around when you need them.
Well, that's it for the dramatic presentation part of Night Transmission. I'm just going to leave you here with a bit of random music. Don't really ever try to develop a theme for the music I choose. Although that does sometimes happen. It really doesn't start out intentional. It's just stuff I like. I also want to recommend to you the website, nighttransmissions.com. It's where I post the show notes every week. As I said earlier, this is show 33, and if you go there, you may find a thing or two to interest you. This is Gary Clinton signing off. Well, see you next week, I hope.
I'm sorry you're tired. The evening has hardly begun. Thanks for the dance. Try to look inspired. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1. There's a rose in my hair. My shoulders are bare. I've been wearing this costume forever. Turn up the music, pour out the wine. Stop at the surface is fine. We don't need to go any deeper. I carried. It was almost a daughter or a son. And there's nothing to do but to wonder if you are as hopeless as me and as decent. We're joined in the spirit, joined at the hip, joined in the panic, wondering if we've come to some sort of agreement. La 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 la. It was fine, it was fast. I was first, I was last. In line at the temple of pleasure. But the green was so green, and the blue was so blue. I was so I, and you were so you. The crisis was light as a feather. The dance, it was hell, it was swell, it was fun. Thanks for all the dances. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1. Thanks for the dance.
some enchanted evening, you may see a stranger. You may see a stranger across a crowded room, and somehow you know even then, that somewhere you'll see her again and again. Some enchanted evening, someone may be laughing, you may hear her laughing across a crowded room, and night after night, this strange as it seems, the sound of her laughter will sing in your dreams. Who can explain it? Who can tell you why? Fools give you reasons, wise men never try. Some enchanted evening, when you find your true love, when you feel her call you across a crowded room, then fly to her side and make her your own, or all through your life you may dream all alone. Once you have found her, never let her go. Once you have found her, never.